The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here today with truly one of my favorite people ever, Becky Sheets. Well, first of all, Becky, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Good. It's great to talk to you again. It's been, as we said earlier, it's been too long.
Yeah. When we say earlier, we're talking off air. So we do a lot of talking off air, and you'll only get part of this, folks. So Becky, author of three books now, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
One that just came out.
Correct. That's right.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that one first, then I'm going to backtrack.
Okay. Sure. The one that just came out is maybe the most fun, and that is a parable book that I wrote with my partner at Sun Tzu Strategies, Mark McNeely. It's called The Tiger and the Dragon, and it's a business parable based on Sun Tzu's Art of War. I know we're going to delve a lot more into the Art of War here, but that's a snapshot. So it's just an ebook. We just wanted to get the story out there, and we're optimistic and hopeful that folks are going to enjoy it.
I started reading it yesterday, and I love it. So,
cool.
So we are going to be talking about Becky's book, The Art of War for Small Business. But before we get into that, Becky, I want you to start when you were 15 and you went to your first karate class.
Tang Soo Do,
right?
Tang Soo Do, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know it well.
That's my son's black belt.
That's right. That's right. You do know it well. You've observed it closely. So I, like a lot of young people, like your son and a lot of others probably, I was fascinated by martial arts. You know, isn't that cool? I found a school near me. I'm from rural Pennsylvania. It's not like there's martial arts schools everywhere like there is here where you and I live in the Washington, D.C. area. But I found a martial arts school. I went in for my very first time, and it was Tang Soo Do Karate, which is a Korean karate. Your listeners are probably familiar with Taekwondo at least, so it has some similarities to that. Anyway, so I took my first class, and I was just hooked. Most people, when they walk into a martial arts school, most young people and adults too, I think they say, "I want to get a black belt." You know, that's my goal. That's what they see. That's their goalpost. I want a black belt. I knew that first night, 15 years old. I didn't know a whole lot at 15, but I knew I wanted to do this. I wanted to pursue this. I wanted to do martial arts. I wanted to teach it. I wanted to make it part of what I did with my life. And you know, I've been blessed and healthy enough to have that that happen. And as you said, now that I'm 25, you said generously or all fair, I'm a little older than 25, but I've been doing it consistently since that ripe young age of 15.
Yeah, but there's a twist here, because Tang Soo Do is more of a karate, and
yes,
when you went to college, you found something slightly different.
I did. So I went to college in the early and mid-90s. And so that was when, if you can recall, the Steven Seagal movies, do you remember seeing those?
Oh, yeah. Steven does my art, or frankly, otherwise, I do his.
Yeah. So you've seen, you saw Aikido or whatever in the world it was that we saw in these movies. And I said, man, I don't know what that is. But it's not karate. And by the time I went away to college, I had a couple of black belts in different systems of karate, and I loved it. But there was something enchanting and alluring about another way of doing of self-defense. And that was when I found jiu-jitsu. I was looking for Aikido, because I don't mean to be too technical, but that's what the big guy in the movies did. And I, you know, serendipitously, I ended up finding jiu-jitsu, which is very different from Aikido philosophically, in that the design is to use, like Aikido, to use a person's energy to unbalance him, to redirect him, to use all that force he brings you with a superior strategy, which we'll talk about, I know, definitely lends itself to business. But with the jiu-jitsu, the idea is to eliminate the threat. you know, not just change his mind, not just change the energy, but it's a very self-defense oriented system where you want to shut down the opponent as quickly as possible. And one other footnote I'll say, because it's 2017 and not 1995, when we say jiu-jitsu today, 99% of your listeners are going to think about mixed martial arts. They're going to think about a cage or a couple of guys or women in the middle of a ring with a referee. That's not what I'm talking about. The jiu-jitsu that I've done and that I do and that I teach, it's an aikijitsu. It is Japanese. It is self-defense oriented. It's not competitive. So a little different philosophy there.
It's a little different philosophy, and like Aikido, it operates in a sphere. It's not a linear art. So
yes, very circular. And that plays into the strategy. That is exactly right, Mark. So the karate strategy, I'm speaking in gross generalizations, but the karate strategy, it's force on force. You come in, you attack me as hard as you can. I block you as hard as I can, and I deliver a powerful force. Now, what really happens in the real world is the stronger person tends to win. That was my experience. I trained. I ate this stuff. I went to all the tournaments. I went to all the seminars. I rented all the VHS tapes back then. I went to, I was the first one in the school, the last one to leave. I fought with my friends I trained with in my garage at my parents' home. I practiced continually, harder than everybody, I promise you. But I got beat by the bigger guys who were less experienced too frequently when it came down to actually fighting in a controlled environment. And I realized this force-on-force thing is not working for the smaller person, and that was me. I was a smaller person. So that's where the idea, like you said, the circular philosophy, the redirection of the Aiki systems, of the Aikido, of the Jiu-Jitsu, it's a, in my view, in my opinion, it's a superior strategy for me. It's a better strategy. It's more effective because I don't have to rely on my strength and my muscle, which is limited. I can rely on circular motion, which is unlimited.
Right, and there's always somebody bigger and stronger, regardless of how big and strong you are. So having the option to adapt is critical, which is why we're going to talk about the art of war for small business. Now, I'm ecstatic that you wrote the book because I had been meaning to for a while, but your understanding of Sun Tzu, you know, and I hate to admit this, is so much deeper than mine. But your understanding helps me to understand and apply the principles better anyway. I've been a fan of the book since it came out. So let's start with why you wrote the book.
Sure. So there's a couple of books. As you know, there's Sun Tzu for Women I wrote first, and then Sun Tzu for Small Business was the second book, and that may be where we'll focus here today, and that's great. So Sun Tzu for Women did well, and that's where I really got the genesis of the idea of writing something uniquely for small businesses. There, I canvassed the English language text, and there's nothing out there that is designed for small business and entrepreneur practitioners to apply the art of war. And it's a complete disconnect as to why that is, because the art of war itself, as you know, was written for a smaller force to overtake a much larger force. So by utilizing hit and run tactics, by utilizing guerrilla warfare, by utilizing a strategy, much like the martial arts we just talked about, using a strategy that's better in line for a smaller person or a less a force that you say you've got one person versus five people or 1,000 soldiers versus 50,000 soldiers. How do you use a superior way of doing war or a superior way of doing business? So the parallels were very, very clear to me, and as the book unfolded and the reception I've had, that they've been very, very clear to readers as well.
Okay, cool. So so that's the relevance for small business was obviously apparent to you. But the war as a metaphor, you touch on this in the book too, and it's very important because it's, you know, Jack Trout, Al Reese came out with Marketing Warfare shortly after the strategy revolution hit the business world in the late 60s, early 70s. So why is it important for you in here?
Sure. So a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, there'll be some margin of folks who are not going to be comfortable with the idea of war as a metaphor for business for any number of reasons. And I understand that, and I appreciate that. And if you're not comfortable with war as a metaphor for business, think of it in terms of competitiveness. I'm not suggesting that anybody read this book and then, you know, utilize straight military tactics, but what we're doing is we're utilizing tactics for superior competitiveness. So that's an easy way to think about it. And I've heard the art of war referred to, as you probably have as well, as the art of peace, that it's as much about enabling your mass, your political sphere of being at peace, by having a superiorly trained, a better trained, better armed, government or state. So think about it in terms of competitiveness and how to keep yourself from being attacked, how to keep your organization from falling prey to a stronger organization by understanding and applying Sun Tzu strategic principles. So I do think that there should be a comfort level with the text for everyone. And one of the things you and I talked about, Mark, before the call, and you might want to reference this, was an article that I just came across today in my Google alerts from a very high profile pop culture medium, where they completely misquoted Sun Tzu, and they called the text one that was all about military and dominion and fighting and killing and murder and brutality, and they were likening the person who was utilizing the strategies as being a warmonger. And it's a complete misunderstanding of the art of war, a complete misunderstanding of the text, because the book is really about how a leader should have the character to lead, to govern, and how not about how we just fight with at any opportunity, but about how we leverage our attributes strategically. So you never fight unless you have to. You never waste energy and resources and manpower or woman power unless you have to, and you do it in a way that minimizes damage. So there's a lot more to a text called The Art of War than meets the eye.
Cool. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I will be back with Becky after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm here with Becky Sheets. Let me suggest strongly that you get The Art of War for Small Business. You can get it at Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. it's an extraordinary work, particularly for smaller businesses, and the reasons will become apparent as we go along. So let's start off with let's do the short list of the advantages and disadvantages of being a small business, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I at the beginning of the book, I did kind of set that table, like you said, of the advantage and the disadvantages. And one of the reasons that I did that, so much of what I think that you and I would say is that are the principles that we aspire to, the real wisdom in running our businesses and in counseling others, is in fundamentals. It's in basics. You know, it's not in those principles that are very, 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 very complex, but it's in the fundamental truths that underlie those. So the reality is, if you're a smaller entity, you are not going to compete against a larger force based on resources. You're not going to out-fight, out-spend, out-maneuver, or utilize more people. You're not going to just throw people at a problem or throw money at a problem. You're not going to be able to fight based on the leverage, the advantages that a small organization has. So we need to start there. We need to say, okay, so what are the advantages that smaller entities tend to have, and how do you leverage those? So some of those are and this will definitely apply to the government contracting community, but building alliances, right? Not just if you're a huge entity, they still have alliances too, but they can utilize their own resources, whereas a smaller organization needs to join hands with their allies, as Sun Tzu says. Agility, obviously, moving quickly and agility. So many times a small organization will try to, and I've seen this myself, and I'm sure you have as well, and feel free to share any examples while, you know, protecting the innocent without naming names, but you see these smaller organizations try to mimic what the big guys, as I'll say, do, and they don't, but they have that agility and that ability to be quick and rapid, but they don't utilize it as like they should, because they want to be like the big guys, whereas the big guys are slow to move, slow to maneuver, and we can easily outmaneuver them as smaller entities. The ability to build consensus, the ability to, for a management team to move quickly versus having to tie a bunch of different divisions and a bunch of different organizations together to move quickly, and in that, to be united. the ability for a small organization to be mission-focused and say, this is what we do, this is what we're about, and we're going to move as one body. And I can't tell you, and I illustrate this throughout the Sun Tzu for, or the Art of War for Small Business, how important it is to be united, and in so doing, divide your enemy, divide your adversary. I can go on and on and on with examples of those advantages for small businesses. I don't know if you want me to go through more or whet the appetite.
Touch on a couple of the disadvantages.
Well, some of the disadvantages are kind of, I think, very clear, and that would be not having the resources, right? Not having the funding, not having the people, not having the expertise, perhaps not having the expertise in-house that a large organization may have, and having to have one person wear a lot of different hats. I mean, it's just the reality of what a small business has to deal with: lack of structure, lack of hierarchy, lack of organization, and part of the this doesn't really make sense, but I talked about the importance of being united, but sometimes having a lack of a unified purpose, because what I've seen with so many small organizations and in the federal space is they can be a little nebulous, right, and not knowing what they stand for, the kind of opportunities they're going to go after, but they, in chasing opportunities, they lose that unified focus, that purpose. And you see it when you talk to the people who work there, a lack of, one of my best analogies, it's not from Sun Tzu, it's all the wood behind one arrowhead. I love that, having all the force behind one finite point. But when you start to get distracted by different objectives, different goals, different contracts, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this. And I see it time and again in small businesses, versus being focused on, you know what, and you know, you want to be flexible, but you know what, folks, this is who we are, this is the kind of customer we target, this is what we do, and we're not going to chase shiny objects, we're going to go after the market that we know is our viable market. So there's a lot of those advantages and disadvantages that I spell out, and that's really the focus of where the book comes from. So we know, you have to know yourself, you have to know your adversary, you have to know your landscape, and as you know, that's fundamental to Sun Tzu and to the Art of War.
Right, and we're going to start with understanding yourself in just a moment, but basically what you're saying here is that the companies that tend to defocus, that mm-hmm. go after the shiny rocks, they really don't have a strategy, because if they did, they would not be as easily distracted.
Absolutely, and I think you would say that. I mean, is it fair to say that you've seen that as well, in your work, that the focus versus the lack of focus, the understanding your competitive advantages and your strategic principles versus not understanding those and not having clarity on those are two entirely different organizations, especially for a small organization.
Yeah, and sometimes I come into small or medium or on occasion large companies to help them define that particular focus. Because if I'm in a large company, it's with a group within the large company that's going after a particular mission and, you know, building that differentiation. So let's start with the principle of understanding yourself.
Sure. Well, that really comes back to what we're talking about, and that is understanding. I went through a few of those advantages and disadvantages, but understanding what your unique advantages are in the marketplace. There's nothing revolutionary here, right? There's nothing that I think any listener is going to say, wow, that's a principle I never thought about. But it's the discipline, not only the knowing what those competitive advantages are, understanding what you do better than anybody else in the marketplace. And I talk a lot in the book about inventing categories, brands like Chobani, brands like 5-Hour Energy, brands like Sam Adams, the beer company. They have invented categories. Sam Adams, for example, did not set out and does not to this day really compete against Budweiser and Coors and the big brands. They compete against craft beers, and they invented, God bless them, they invented the craft beer industry. So they know what they bring to the market. They know who they are, and they know how they fit within that marketplace. And I think your smaller and any size government contractors need to do that too, versus being nebulous and saying, well, we do this and this and this, saying this is what we do really better than anybody else. And if they don't know what they do better than anybody else, they need to talk to somebody like you. They need to talk with an outside entity to help them define that and understand the marketplace, because really then what are you selling? You're selling something just like a lot of other people, and the value is, you know, it's not a long-term value proposition that you're going to get really happy customers and you're going to have really satisfied employees. But the content of the book, I outline a lot about how brands that stand out, utilizing principles from the Art of War, how they care for and tend to and motivate and mission focus their people versus having folks just go through the motions.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that people need to talk to me about that. They also need to talk to you, because your company helps small businesses, not just in the government market, but pretty much in any sphere, in any market, do the same thing. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. The focus of what I do, I love to write about and talk about the Art of War. So I do a significant amount of speaking to, as you know, my first book is focused on the Art of War for women. So I do a lot of speaking to women's organizations, to corporations that have a women's entity, a women's growth division or something like that, as well as organizations that bring women together to talk about career advancement, about growing their businesses, and as well as organizations that are looking for a strategic to compete better strategically. Maybe their sales organizations or their strategy organizations. And like yourself, I do consulting on helping companies understand, develop that mission, develop their messaging statements and things like that, so that they can compete on a more strategic level within the marketplace and better understand the marketplace that they're playing in.
And understand the value of focusing on your core competency, your competitive advantage, and turning it into a sustainable competitive advantage.
Absolutely. That's the first part, 100%. That's the first part. The second part where I see entities fall down is in the discipline to follow through on that. It's one thing to put it on paper and say, this is what we do. But it takes discipline from leadership to say, hey, you know what? We got a lead today from XYZ company and they want us to do this. So we got an opportunity to team on this. But it's so far outside of where the company wants to go that it doesn't make sense to follow it. So it takes a lot of discipline to follow through on those strategic principles that they lay out.
That's true. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The book is The Art of War for Small Business. Becky's got two other books out, the latest with her business partner. and the title of that one again, Becky?
It is The Tiger and the Dragon, A Business Parable.
And it is available on Amazon. So go there. And again, you're listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, and we shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You can also find the show on iTunes. Don't know why, but you can. I'm here with Becky Sheets. We're talking about her second book, The Art of War for Small Business. You got to get this thing, boys and girls, men and women, whoever's out there listening to this. This is a great book. It will help businesses of any size, but particularly small businesses. So last segment, we talked about understanding yourself, knowing who you are, where you fit, picking out the core competency, what's your competitive advantage, how do you make that a sustainable competitive advantage. Next step, obviously, would be knowing who you're competing against. So, what's Sun Tzu say about this?
Sun Tzu, so I have heard the Art of War, and I think effectively, summed up in this principle. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. Let's say that again. If you know the enemy and you know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. So he writes about how if you know yourself, you may win half the time, but if you don't know the adversary, you can't be assured of victory. So much of the Art of War, and this is where the martial arts elements that we talked about earlier come into play. The presence of mind to say, we're going to win this, because you're prepared, technically you're prepared, but you're also mentally prepared. You're prepared within the organization to say, we have already been victorious. So you can't have that sense of victory, that sense of we've already done what we need to do, we've already accomplished our victory, and then victory follows. That's what Sun Tzu says. He says the battle happens before it's fought. If you don't know your own organization, your own strengths, and you don't know those of your adversary, there's no way you can really have that presence of mind that you need to be victorious. Sun Tzu writes about creating the conditions of victory, enabling or creating opportunities for your enemy, your adversary, to fail, to fall short. There's no way to do that if you don't have a really good sense of who those adversaries are, and not just who they are. Okay, well, this company XYZ, well, what are their strengths and their weaknesses? I mean, it's a SWOT, but it's more than that. It's more than understanding those opportunities and those threats. It's knowing them within the context of your real, live, honest to goodness. We talk about battlefield and war as a metaphor for business, but really your landscape, right? The environment, the market in which you're playing in, and not just where are they today, where are they going? What are the dynamic opportunities? And you can't get that just sitting inside your own office. You can't get that just looking at trade journals or reading the paper. You have to really be out into the, and that's why the government contracting community is so interesting. You have so many opportunities for so much organic intelligence, so many side conversations, and the more alliances that we are able to build, the stronger our organizations are going to be, and that's so much more critical, and that much more critical for a small organization.
Yeah, and you touched on something there. There's so many information sources out there available to build that intelligence backlog, the knowledge you need to proceed. And, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that offer paid services in this arena. Most of the time, I recommend not using those because the smaller companies, you know, if they subscribe to this, they're still going to have to take the time to massage the information to figure out where it fits for them, et cetera. If you set up some Google alerts and you find some information sources, so you're on a GWAC, are you monitoring, let's say you're on CIOSP3, small business, are you monitoring the Google alert that should be coming through your email on when stuff happens? Are you monitoring your competitors on this vehicle? Are you watching what they're doing? How have they manipulated their websites? What are they doing on social? You know, there's a lot of things that you can do without paying for it.
That's right. And you asked earlier about the metaphor, war as a metaphor for business. You know, the examples that you just gave, Mark, if we are taking our businesses as seriously, as you just said, as we would if we were sending men and women into battle, how would that change the way we do business? If we would operate with that same level of seriousness and risk that generals have in the field of battle, there's no grounds there for sloppiness. There's no grounds for inattention to detail. So I completely agree with you to go to those extra steps and be ready to always be thinking about outthinking and outmaneuvering the competition, and also be thinking about how the competition is looking to outmaneuver and outthink you. Just because Sun Tzu writes a lot about deception, just because something looks a certain way, is that really the reality? Just because there's a perception out there that this organization's doing this or has said this or is moving here, what's the reality? So fact checking, getting that information from sources close to the opportunity, sources close to the organizations, partner organizations, clients, et cetera. Sun Tzu says, miss no opportunity to defeat the enemy. And again, if you know the enemy, if you know who that adversary is, and the closer you get to that information, to those sources, the better equipped you'll be not to miss those opportunities, to take advantage, as he says, of every opportunity.
Correct. And you know, your intel on this side is what gives you the edge. So if you're watching the competitor closely, understanding where they're likely to go and waiting for the movement that occurs that shows you they are going to go that way, you've got to be able to respond quickly. Large businesses usually aren't going to be as responsive as small businesses can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. And the quintessential example that I'm sure they're using in business schools today, and we'll probably use it for decades to come, is Blockbuster and Netflix. Blockbuster was completely unwilling and not capable of maneuvering around their model, you know, the old school video store model, whereas the Netflix owner, he was frustrated by a ridiculous fee he had for a movie he forgot he even rented. So he mailed himself a copy of a movie, to see how it works, to see, hey, how does this model, before the company was created, does this even work? And guess what? It showed up in great shape. And he said, there we go. I have an idea right there. And this is when Netflix emerged. Now, when you say Netflix, I mean, when you talk to someone in their teens, Netflix means TV, right? It's you and I say we're going to watch TV. Young people say we're going to watch Netflix. I mean, it's a whole different connotation now. But it started from the big guy who wasn't able to maneuver, and a smaller, hungrier organization with an idea that easily outmaneuvered and outflanked that really well-entrenched organization. It's encouraging for those of us in small organizations. Anybody with a good idea and perseverance and skill and grit and enough resources can do what Netflix did. It's just finding that opportunity, and that's where the real challenge is, and opportunity.
Right, and you know, on the marketing side of this equation, it's also, you know, important to understand when a fad is becoming a trend. What works in your particular scenario. So there's a lot of Web 2.0 tools out there that simply do not work in the government market. Yet when especially larger companies, some smaller companies as well, hire, quote, the social media expert, it's going to be some millennial or pre-millennial who's going to want to put everything on Pinterest or Snapchat, platforms that really have no bandwidth in business to government.
Right. So, that's right. Yeah. Just because it's cool doesn't mean that it's relevant.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the tactics that you choose also have to meet the criteria that you're going after here. When you're studying your competitors, you can blast away on Snapchat about how stupid this company's moving this way. But, you know, if your customers aren't there, they aren't reading this stuff, you know, you're talking in a vacuum. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's right.
I want to save the next segment for a larger topic. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center. Oh, before we go, Becky, where do you want people to find you?
They can find me, books, information about the training that I do, the keynote speaking, all of that, at the name of the author we're talking about, Sun Tzu. SunTzuStrategies.com. That's S-U-N, like look up at the sun, T as in Thomas, Z as in zebra, U as in under, SunTzuStrategies.com.
And Becky does a tremendous amount of speaking and training. If you haven't heard her speak, you're really missing a huge treat. So going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com, 1500 AM. We shall return after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with one of my favorite people ever, Becky Sheets. The book is The Art of War for Small Business. Get it, read it, live it. Serious biz, folks. I mean, if you're a small business owner and you haven't read this bad boy, shame on you. There's two books that are key for small businesses. This is one of them, and Steve Koprince's Small Business Contractor's Guide to Government Marketing. I forget what it's called, but Koprince, K-O-P-R-I-N-C-E. So you get the legal side with Stephen, and the practical strategic implementation with Becky. So this is a market where alliances are absolutely critical. Picking your partners right, knowing how to work with them. So this is also a, you know, when Sun Tzu wrote this book, they had just come out of a period where there was about 150 different fiefdoms in China. Mm-hmm. It had narrowed down to about seven, and Sun Tzu was the general in one of the smaller ones. So alliances are critical when you're going after big game. Why?
Absolutely. Why? Well, as you said, you just can't do it alone. And I think that we have this idea of this gritty entrepreneur who bootstraps it and conquers the world all on typically his, right? But the picture we have, his own grit. And the reality is that that's not the model that is emerging successfully today in this era in which we live. It's the organizations that are able to leverage alliances, that are able to leverage relationships, leverage strategic partnerships. I can't tell you how many emails and things like that I get from folks who I've had in my past who have said, hey, I have a speaking opportunity for you. I have somebody you need to speak with. Are you still doing XYZ? These are people who I've crossed in my path throughout my life that just by being out there and in working and doing the things that I do and, of course, staying current on social media. So all that to say, we can't do the things that we need to do alone. We have to forge alliances, particularly as a small business. One of my favorite examples, and I think it's a really, I think it's a really great example, and I hope your listeners will remember it, and that's the bourbon industry. You know, the bourbon is a distinctly American spirit. By law, it's got to be made in America to be called bourbon.
Right, so it's just a great like American, champagne, French, yeah.
Exactly. It's exactly so. It's an American brand. So when you buy bourbon, you're supporting American industry. But I've been to the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky now twice. I'm a bourbon fan. I just like I said, I love the brand, and I have not in any one of the distilleries that I've been in, and I've been in the big distilleries, the ones we all know, that the Jim Beams and the Eagle Rare and things like that. They make that makes Blanton's, and I've been in the small crafts. I have never once heard anybody who works in a distillery say anything disparaging about another bourbon. I've never heard Jim Beam say, oh, well, you don't want to drink Maker's Mark. They actually own Maker's Mark now, but you don't want to drink XYZ bourbon because it's swill. They've never said anything negative. Bourbon supports other bourbons. It's the idea of this rising tide lifting all boats. I don't know this for sure. My thinking is that probably they're not competing against one another as much as they are other spirits, as much as they are maybe vodkas and gins and things like that. And there may be an organizational awareness or a multi-organizational awareness of that. But whenever I think about alliances, I think about that industry. And one other thing about bourbon, that's a great example of creating a category and doing something better, is the Elmer T. Lee story. And back when bourbon was decades ago, before, now bourbon's hot. You see it everywhere. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be
tons of commercials. Yes,
tons of commercials. Absolutely, it's a big industry. It didn't used to be really. I don't know. It didn't taste like it did now. It didn't used to be very highly regarded. And Elmer T. Lee said, "I'm going to make a premium bourbon." He had nothing to lose. The industry wasn't doing well, and he created Blanton's. And Blanton's is a fantastic bourbon. And what it did was it showed the world that you can make a better quality product. And that's what's happened. And that's the reason behind the increase in bourbon is not just because it's cool. It's because it tastes better. It's a better product now. But he created that opportunity by developing a better category. He went where the competitors weren't. You know, he went where nobody else was and created a great category. And like I said, bourbon has risen along with him. So I love that idea of forging alliances. And I think there's a definite relevance there for your listeners in the contracting space, is how can you form allegiances with organizations around you. And I know that that's part and parcel of what government contractors typically tend to do. But what opportunities are you missing by not leveraging those alliances?
Well, and you have to, you know, you have to go back to number one, understanding yourself, understanding the enemy, you know, so your enemy of one day may be your ally of the next day, but it's a matter of knowing where you fit and where their weakness is, and that, you know, if they're going after a big contract and you know where their weakness is and you can fill that void, you say, why don't we partner on this gig?
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
But, you know, I like the bourbon thing because I've been writing a lot about GWAX lately, and the one of the reasons that GWAX have become more popular over the past couple of years is that the owners of GWAX, Soup, CIOCS, Alliant, whatever the vehicle might be, they consciously or unconsciously, probably unconsciously, are pushing the vehicle, not just themselves. So the more the name gets out, the more people understand that the owners of planks on these contracts are pre-vetted. They have very particular skills. They had to jump through all the hoops beforehand to get on this contract. And they're easier to buy from. The fees are cheaper for the government. all of these things, you know, line up to raise the again, rising tide lifts all boats. Rising tide lifts all contractors who own these vehicles. It makes it easier for them to sell.
Right. That's right. And it takes a certain way of running a business to have that sort of, I think you'd probably say this too, Mark. You meet different people who run business, different types of personalities, and you'll meet some business owners who just are afraid of partnering. They're afraid of teaming. They're overly proprietary and unwilling to share ideas. Others who just are, I'm going to say lazy, who just don't want to go the extra mile to get out of the office and to forge those relationships. And you have other types of organizations that are very, very mindful of the value of building those alliances. And I don't know what your experience has been. You're much closer to the federal space than I am, but I've got to believe that those small businesses that are the second, that are open to forming alliances and that are generous in sharing opportunities and gathering opportunities are the ones who are more successful.
Yeah. I run across this continuously. And, for those that are more reticent to do the partnering, my consulting with these companies tends to be much shorter than with the others, because there's only, so much growth that can happen, if at all.
That's right. So far you can take them.
We're not even like halfway through my list of stuff that I wanted to talk about. But what I'd like to wrap up with over the next few minutes is, what are the major points that you want small businesses to think about as they move forward? So just take it and run.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was expecting that we would get into a question like this, and it's so hard to distill the art of war down into those few principles. I will do my best here. At the end of the Art of War for Small Business, I have a list of quotations that are really the ones that small businesses need to, I think, be mindful of. So some of those, and kind of a cliff notes of those, are some of the things we've already said: the knowing your enemy, knowing yourself, know who you are, know who you are not, clarify those differentiators, and like I said, hire a professional if you're not able to do it yourself, and be ready to take their advice. Like you said, some of those engagements are shorter if they're just not willing to have the discipline to do what you're advising them to do. Another principle that we really haven't talked about in much detail is really fundamental, and it's so apropos for small businesses, and that's to attack weakness. I talked about the karate example of force on first versus the jujitsu example of redirecting, of utilizing that force against them. When we think in a military perspective, one of my favorite examples is probably Gettysburg, General Lee. You've got the forces are all converging at the same time, and General Lee's mentality is, we will meet the enemy on the field of battle and we will fight them. So you take all that, and it didn't go real well for the Confederate forces, because it was that force on force mentality, even when you're outmanned and you're out positioned. So attack the big organizations, your competitors, attack their weakness. Chobani, the Greek yogurt manufacturer, they invented the Greek yogurt category, but they didn't do it by going into grocery stores and saying, put us on the same shelf space with Yoplait and Danone and all the other manufacturers that at that time were not doing Greek yogurt. They created their own category. They went into health food chains, and they went into other places like that where they were not competing against other Greek yogurts. They were a different category, and now they moved into the yogurt category on their own, of their own accord, because they've generated that much more revenue. But, and I mentioned Sam Adams. Sam Adams did not compete against Budweiser and Coors. They competed against and created the category of competing against other craft beers. They attacked weakness. They went where the opportunity was, versus trying to create opportunity where it didn't exist. So attack weakness, avoid strength. That's something else that's key for small businesses in the federal space. I mentioned being ready to seize an opportunity, take advantage of every opportunity. You use those examples like Google Alerts and subscribing to specific services and having the industry knowledge, being ready to take advantage of that knowledge. A small organization can move quickly. They can be agile. They can adapt. But don't, and I see this, Mark, so many times, it's painful. I've seen it with so many small businesses that I work with. this, and it's not everybody, but too many times, inability to utilize the data that they have. Okay, now we know that this is the opportunity. We know what the competitive landscape looks like, but they just want to do one more thing, or they just want to wait this for this to happen, when in reality, they're going to miss that opportunity. So when you think about it in a military complex and or in context, and Sun Tzu writes really viscerally about it, about the being like a water breaking forth from a chasm, utilizing all that energy like you would in a battlefield dynamic, utilizing that energy, utilizing that force when the opportunity presents itself, and not 2 weeks later, 2 months later, 2 years later. And I guess the last thing I'll say, and I could talk for another 2 hours, but unity, being unified. We talked earlier. Unity in your mission as an organization, unified in your purpose. What are you here for as an organization? What are you designed to do? And again, this sounds really fundamental. It's like, yeah, sure, you know, that lady who wrote those Art of War books really didn't say anything I didn't already know. But if we knew it and we ran our businesses like we knew it, it'd be an entirely different way of doing business. I write about Wegmans, for example. Wegmans is a grocery store chain. Those of us who live in the D.C. area are familiar with it. It's just a grocery store chain, right? But the way they care for their employees, the way they think about their employees first and then their customers, and the way that they know that that will influence their customer care, it's a different standard. They pay for their employees to get additional higher education. It's that unity of purpose. They have causes within the organization where the employees rally around and they do things in the community. And it's all part of an overall strategy. They have a unified purpose for what they do. So whereas to somebody from the outside, they may say, well, it's just a grocery store. It's not. It's their goal. It's their mission. It's what they're there to do. So taking something that could be a commodity even, but elevating it to a higher purpose with that sense of unity. I would challenge everybody on the call, on your listening to your show today, to think about how they can unite their people better, how they can pull their people together behind one mission, one purpose, one focus better. And beyond that, how they can use that to divide their enemy, to divide the adversary, because that's also quintessential art of war. We didn't get into a lot of that. There's so much of the text to get into, but I hope I've kind of whet the proverbial appetites here for some of your listeners.
And I'll probably have you back and we can talk about some more. The book is The Art of War for Small Business. The website is Sun Tzu Strategies, SUNTZU Strategies. The author is Becky Sheets. Becky, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Mark. Your questions, as always, are terrific. I admire your perspective, your understanding of strategy, and everything that you've done for the people you work with. So it's been a pleasure and a privilege.
Well, thank you so much. Again, this is not my day job. I do advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government, developing that marketing strategy that helps define and differentiate who you are, what you do, and where it is best applied. Drop me a line at markamtower@gmail.com. If you want to discuss this. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.